Welcome to The Wolf Whistle, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Welcome to The Wolf Whistle.
Welcome to another edition in our continued special series of Wolf Whistle podcasts, where we speak to former players about their best 11 from their time at the club. We're very lucky to be joined today by former midfielder from the 70s, Gerry O'Hara. Gerry, how are we?
I'm very good, Jason. Yourself?
I am not too bad at all, my friend, not too bad at all. You've probably seen today I've shaved my hair for charity, so I've got a pretty...
Indeed, my friend, you look a picture. Suits you, mate.
I've got a freezing cold head. But I did task you yesterday with picking your best 11 from when you was at Wolves in the 70s, one of the golden eras for the club. So what formation are you going to go for, Gerry?
I'm going to go for, seeing as it's the 70s, I'm going to go for a 4-3-3.
Well, because if you go to the 80s, it's a 4-4-2. So 4-3-3, very interesting. So obviously you've got to start with a goalkeeper. Who's your number one keeping the net, Gerry?
Well, I think there's only one that I could possibly choose.
Yeah.
I was lucky to play with some decent keepers at Wolves at the time. Gary Pearce, obviously, was and played in the 74 Cup final, but yes, it was a fine keeper. There was a young lad there when I was a kid who went on to have a decent career in the game, and I think if he'd have been slightly taller, a guy called Kevin Charlton, I think Kevin would have been a superstar. He had everything, but he was just a wee bit small, Kevin. Yeah. Went on to play for Bournemouth and Hereford and Telford. And right at the end of my career, or at the Wolves, we signed Paul Bradshaw.
Yeah.
I'd played against Paul a couple of times and knew him quite well, who obviously was an excellent keeper, but I never really played with Paul. So the only one that I could possibly stick in the nets is Mr. Parks, Lofty. A much maligned figure, I felt, at the Wolves at times. He was a fine goalkeeper, Phil.
Yes.
Commanded his area. You know, McGarry tried to replace him two or three times with various people, and it didn't work. Phil saw them off. But he was a great lad, still is a great lad.
Yeah.
And he was a fine goalkeeper, Phil.
And if you didn't pick him, he would never buy you another pint, would he?
No, well, I mean, that's getting fewer and far between now. I seem to be getting all his now, like, you know.
Yeah,
but,
that's about right.
I mean, what's interesting with Phil is Phil went to the States after the Wolves and during his time at the Wolves. And I think in about four or five seasons playing there, I think twice he was chosen as the most valuable goalkeeper in the league.
Wow.
Which, you know, considering the dearth of talent that was playing in the American League at that time, says something for me.
Oh, definitely. So we've got Loft in goal. Who is your, obviously, 4-3-3, playing four at the back. Who's your right back, Gerry?
Right, well, I've chosen the defence, and I've tried to run this through the team with people I feel could have stepped straight into the modern game,
yeah,
and particularly more so with the back four. People that I felt were comfortable on the ball, you know, were never flustered, and whose confidence. And this is a bit left field here. This is because the guy I'm choosing for right back is Bobby Thompson.
Okay.
Now, Bobby, I never played at Wolves with Bobby.
Right.
I saw him numerous times when I was a young man going up to the Molineux, and always thought what a good player he was. But I got to know Bobby well. I played with him in non-league. I played against him on the Sundays. And I got to know, and I played with Bobby numerous times, many times at the old Wolves,
yeah,
the Wolves All-Stars. Got to know him well, got to know his family well, and Bobby was just quality. He was excellent on the ball. Never got flustered. he could catch pigeons, Bobby. He was that quick.
Yeah.
And even late into his sort of 60s, Bobby, he was immaculate in terms of his fitness. And but what a good player, Bobby. I never saw anybody run Bobby. I think Bobby run about four or five England caps at a time where England had some superb players, you know, the yes. mid-60s to the late-60s. And so I'm going, and it's a big choice for me, that is, because I'm talking about, you know, really, really good players, and, you know, like Jeff Palmer, who was a good friend there as well, and it would have been very easy to pick Jeff. But I've plumped for Bobby Thompson.
Yeah, great, great decision. Obviously, Bobby's a bit before my time, but I know from speaking to other, you know, former players, how comfortable he was on the ball. So that's your right back, Bobby Thompson. Who is your left back?
Well, left back is one of the shoo-ins for me, and that's Derek Parkin.
Wow.
Derek Parkin, you know, I mean, people of a certain age who watch Derek, you know, Derek had a career, you know, got the record appearances, which will never, ever be beaten in my opinion, and he got that during a time where he had nearly a season off with heart murmur.
Yeah, so you know. I mean, if you think about it, Jerry, 609 appearances. Let's just say that's 30 games a season over 20 years. It's just not going to happen.
No, I mean, Derek. I mean, he was as fit as a butcher's dog. He apart from his season out, Derek was never injured. He was a fantastic trainer, but Derek had everything. He was predominantly right footed, but you wouldn't have known that watching him both in training and in games. He just oozed quality. He had a side to him. You wouldn't want to cross Derek. You know, there was a few wingers that have gone into row three of the old Molyneux stand facing Derek Parkin, you know. but he just had everything. He was quick. He read the game. He was really comfortable on the ball. And players will tell you that there's always a couple of players in the game that you didn't really like playing against, etc. Now, I was lucky that I never had to face Derek in a game, but I faced him many a times in training, in first team, second team games, and I hated playing against him.
Really?
I couldn't run him, I couldn't head skill him, I couldn't out strength him. I used to think, oh, really don't want to be up against Derek today, like, you know, and he was just absolute quality.
So, a couple of comfortable ball players at fullbacks. Who are going to be your two centre halves, Jerry?
Well, continuing that theme, Jace, another shoe in for me is the Scottish magician, who was Frank Munro.
Frank Munro,
possibly for me one of the world class players we had at that time. If Frank had have had pace, I mean he was a great player anyhow, but he just would have completed him. Frank could do everything. He was great in the air. He was struck a lovely ball. He could see the game, and he just oozed quality, Frank. I mean, I remember there was players like Malcolm McDonald and of that ilk who, when you're there asked who was the player that they least liked facing, Frank would come up quite a lot. I mean, we used to joke that Frank used to let Malcolm McDonald out of his pocket when we played Newcastle or people like that. And he was just absolute quality, Frank.
Yeah.
He made the game look so easy. And in training, he did things that you just could look back and marvel at. You know, he was absolute quality, Frank.
People say as well, for a centre half, he was unbelievably skillful.
Oh, he's touch, and as I said, he used to do things in games particularly in training that, you know, you would just look in awe at him, particularly as young men like me. And I got to know, I was very friendly with Frank. I got to know Frank really well, and he was a top lad as well, Frank. Bit of a boy, but you know, he was certainly a likable rogue, Frank.
Loved
the man.
Do you think Frank was ahead of his time? Because one of the stories I heard was, you know, he'd that the ball would be coming over the top, the striker would be in front of him, he'd call And then he'd duck and he'd go straight to the keeper. You know, like I said,
he had this little trick as well, Frank, because what Frank used to make centre forwards look silly, because the ball would be going up, and as it was in the game in those days, it would become a tussle between the centre forward and the centre half to win the ball. What Frank used to do very, very carefully, just as they would go for the ball, Frank would just touch the centre forward very slightly. Yeah. So he went forward and Frank would just step back and, like you said, he'd just duck and just let the ball go through in the main to Lofty. And, of course, the centre forwards would be moaning, saying, "Oh, come on, ref," you know. But he was so clever, such a clever player, Frank.
Yeah. So clearly ahead of his time. So who is
going
to partner the great Frank Munro?
Well, This is one that may surprise a few people, but when you're talking about the likes of you know, the names I could have put in, John McCall, you know, George Berry came through, Bob Hazel came through. The player I'm going to name is Colin Brazier.
Yeah, good call, Colin Brazier.
And once again, Colin used to make the game look pretty simple. He oozed quality on the ball. He always looked like he had a lot of time. Good in the air, you know. He got about. He was surprisingly quick. But Colin, he just had a lot of skill for me there. Yeah. And as I said, he read the game really well. I mean, you know, the people may say, well, you know, George Berry got more games, Bob Hazel, you know, etc. But for me, Colin was a better player than either of those two. I think what they had over Colin was probably a belief in themselves. I think if Colin had believed more in himself, I really think he could have gone on to great things in the game, Colin.
And you know what? I think that's a fair point, Jerry. And I think that's what Colin would agree with as well. And I think, you know, that there may have been a little bit of a confidence issue, because, you know, he didn't really get a sustained run in the team. He seemed to be in and out of the team. But everybody that played with him just said how comfortable he was on the ball.
Yeah. Well, Colin was almost classed as a utility player, like he could play in midfield.
Yeah.
I mean, in all fairness, a couple of times in the reserves he played up front. Because he was good on the ball and he was comfortable on the ball, and so they move him into midfield and things. And I think when in situations like that, you sometimes don't get to play in the position that you enjoy most. And I think Colin did suffer from that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And Colin sometimes I felt was never really in love with the game. I felt, you know, the game came so easy to him. I think Colin is a character, and I think he would agree with this, that, you know, sometimes he got a bit bored with the game, you know, and things like this. If he'd have had George Berry's arrogance and attitude to the game, he would, for me, he would have been a superstar, Colin.
Wow. And that's a great compliment to play, obviously. You know, Colin, he was a very good
player. I mean, he's paid me to say that.
Colin, And the thing is, I think sometimes being a utility player goes against you, because you've never got that defined position. And
exactly.
That might be one of the reasons why he was on the bench in the 80 League Cup final, because...
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, he I think he got the nod over Wayne Clark and over Norman Bell at the time. Like,
yes,
you know,
that's
right. And I think you're right. I think if something happened in back four, he could drop Colin in. If something happened at full back, he could drop Colin in. If somebody got injured in midfield, he could drop Colin in. So I think you're right.
And I think so we've got four in defence. Who are going to be your three across the midfield? I take it you're playing one on the right, one on the left, and one in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on the right, once again, for me, a huge shoe in, and that's Kenny Hibbitt. I mean, absolute, you know, tremendous player, Ken. Two fantastic feet, struck a magnificent ball either foot, you know, worked his socks off, you know, but was comfortable, had ability, you know, and once again would have stepped into the modern game and been an absolute superstar, Kenny Hibbitt.
He
was absolute quality player.
I think he'd have played in today's game with that. And I don't like comparing eras, but Kenny, from the footage I've seen, is one of the players you could see would just transition with ease.
Absolutely. I I mean, Ken could put his foot in, but you know, if he needed to. But he had a great engine on him, Ken. He would get up, he'd get down, he'd give everything. He'd come off the pitch and he'd be soaked in sweat. But everything he did was quality. You know, a striking of a ball was fantastic. Two fantastic feet. Ken could get, you know, Ken was a goal-scoring midfielder. You know, he'd get you 15, 20 a season, Ken, you know, and all sorts of goals, you know, but he'd create just as many, you know. So Ken, absolute shoo-in for me.
Brilliant. So who is going on the left hand side of this midfield, Jerry?
Well, the left hand side is I can't think of anybody else over and above this little fella, and I love the little man, and that's Willie Carr.
Willie Carr, what a player!
Willie, tremendous player. I mean, Willie was 4'3". You know, 8 stone, ringing wet. But Willie, in today's game, I'd love to see. I mean, the game today, where you look and it's all about passing statistics and ball retention, Willie just never gave the ball away. And it wasn't just, you know, the backwards four-yard pass and sidewards, you know, sort of 8 yards and get it back.
Yeah.
You know, Willie used to, they all meant something. Willie would be looking forward all the time and saw things and you know, great little engine again, Willie. But, you know, he was just a really, really good, solid player, Willie. And you knew exactly what you were getting there. But it's like I said, he just never used to give the ball away, Will. He was a top lad and one of the nicest guys that you would ever meet in football.
100%. So, I mean, to be fair, out of the players you've picked so far, you've picked some players who are really, really comfortable on the ball and in possession. So who is going to be that kingpin in the centre of midfield?
Well, once again, this was a difficult call because, you know, I played, you know, my captain when I was, you know, sort of growing up and in at the ground was Mike Bailey, and what a good player Mike Bailey was. You know, when I was first at the club, you had Danny Heagan, who was an absolutely quality player. But the guy I'm going to plump for in the centre is Steve Daly.
Steve, I love this, but what a player, well, Steve was.
Steve, I've for two seasons, the season that we got relegated in 76, but the 76-77 season, and then the following season, Steve Daly was as good a central midfield player as there was in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve, at that time, well, the actual midfield three I've chosen there, which is Steve in the middle, Hibby on the right, Willie on the left, you know, we basically romped that second division as it was then, that season, went up as champions. And I think that, you know, all three midfielders had double figures for goals, but Steve, I think, had the most. And Steve was playing in the middle, but he was just outstanding. He had a two-season sort of purple patch, and he was the linchpin of the side. He just had played absolutely out of his skin. Steve had two great feet, so he could spray it left, spray it right. He saw a pass. He had a great engine, strong boy. And as I said, you know, McGarry always used to see him as a winger and play him out on the left and et cetera and things like this. And I think Steve came into his own when he was in the middle there. He was the fulcrum of the side, and he could spray passes left, right. He could get forward, knowing that Hibby would cover him or Willie would cover for him. And but I know Steve, he does his after dinner speaking now, and he's always very self deprecating about his career. But Steve Daly was a quality player.
Well, he was, and I think testament to that is the fact that Man City paid £1.4 million.
Absolutely.
For him. You know,
absolutely.
He'll tell you how bad he was at City, and yes, all the jokes. But what a player he was, and you know, we've had Steve on the podcast recently, and to be fair, yes, he is self-deprecating, and it's a shame really, because he was a legend at Wolves, and he'd done the right thing really in moving to City, because it probably was a career progression for him, but it just
I think it was at the time. I mean, you know, he it's like you said that, you know, Malcolm Allison was no mug. He you know, he paid the money for him, which was a record, yeah, you know, in this country at the time. And, you know, it didn't work out for Steve, but I think that was as much to do with the turmoil at Man City at the time as it was to his personal performances.
100%. So, you've got Kenny, Steve and Willie across the midfield. Who are going to be your three forwards leading the line?
Right, well, once again, for me, an absolute shoo-in, and that's JR, that's Johnny Richards.
King John.
You know, I mean, best goal scorer I ever played with. And there were elements of John's game that I don't think people really sort of maybe sort of took into account. And John's as brave as a lion. John got goals sticking his head in and going into places, you know, the old adage, you know, where angels fear to tread. John would get in there, but yeah, he was quality. He knew how to finish. He was lightning. He was strong. He at the time, his sort of relationship with Derek Dugan on the pitch was fantastic. You know, but John was John. Anybody could play with John. You know, and once again, one of the nicest guys that you could ever wish to meet in football.
Yeah, and to
absolute
be honest,
gentleman.
His goal scoring record. I mean, I think I don't know what percentage were in the top flight, but pretty much nearly all of them. 194 goals for the club. I mean, that is just incredible.
Yeah, he was John was top draw. You know, it's a travesty for me that John Richards only ever got one England sort of cap, you know, at the time when he was flying. And then he was played out on the left wing, you know, which you know, didn't help him. But no. John Richards, you know, was a great, great player.
Brilliant. So who is going to partner young King John?
Well, as much as I said, John was an absolute shoo-in. This was one that I thought about. You know, Dugan was Derek was coming to the end of his career, or you know, by the time I was on the fringes of the first team, you had Kindo, Stevie Kindon, who you know could win games on his own. Steve at the time, I played with Bobby Gould. You know, Gouldie was a great lad, great player.
Yeah.
But the guy I'm plumping for up front with Johnny Richards is Alan Sunderland.
Alan Sunderland, yeah.
And I think, see, here's another player at Wolves who I think suffered with the tag of being a utility player.
Yeah.
He was so good and so good on the ball and such ability that I think, you know, Sunday played. He played Alan in midfield. I mean, when I played, you know, four or five of the games I played in the first team, he actually played. Alan Sunderland was playing right back. You know,
okay.
he was so adaptable. McGarry, you know, he liked Alan. He rated Alan, and I think he tried to fit Alan into the side wherever he could. You know, and I think Alan suffered for that.
Yeah,
I think by far and away, and I think this got demonstrated by when Arsenal signed him, and they just stuck him straight up front with Stapleton. And Alan's best position for me was definitely up front, and Alan was another one, absolutely 10-15 yards lightning. Great in the air for a little fella as well. He used to get up and hang there, but he had all the ability in the world, Alan. And I think that all came to fruition, unfortunately for Wolves, more so at Arsenal than he did at Wolves, albeit that he still had a great career at Wolves. But Alan Sunderland,
brilliant.
Top draw,
so
top quality.
So who is going to complete your front three?
Well, Jace, I don't think that I need to really tell you this, do I? If it's on the left-hand side and it's in the 70s, there's only one name, and that's Dave Wagstaff.
What a player. In fact, recently, Jerry, I did watch the 74 League Cup final, and he used to hug the touchline. I mean, what a player Waggy was.
And he was, do you know, he was struggling before. He was actually He just about made it onto the pitch, you know, Waggy. He was struggling with an injury.
Really?
But, I mean, you know, I hear people saying things about some of these players playing now, and Dave Wagstaff in the modern game would have been an absolute world beater.
Yeah.
You know, Waggy was another one. I mean, his legs were like matchsticks, the pair of them. But I've never seen anyone hit a ball like with a left peg like Dave Wagstaff, you know. Yeah. Waggy would be running absolute full pelt. And Derek Dugan credits, you know, Dave Wagstaff with making 90% of the goals he scored at Wolves. Waggy would be running full pelt. He'd go past the fullback and you'd think he's going to run it out, and then he'd clip a ball back into the box. And and the ability he had, I was fortunate enough to play in Waggy's last game in the first team, and it was a funny really, because McGarry brought Waggy back from he was on loan at Blackburn, and he brought him back. We played Charlton in the fifth round of the FA Cup, and he brought Waggy back, and you know, Waggy he lasted 15 minutes. His hamstring went.
Oh.
But I mean, it's like I said, I was fortunate to play the last game he played. But
brilliant.
He was just, I mean, you know, used to look at, and I played a lot of reserve games with Waggy, and I just used to look at it. I'd be over on the right hand side, and if I call for the ball, Waggy would ping you on straight to your feet, 60 yards, and you just drop at your feet. He was a magician. Absolute magician. And once again, and I think of all the players that I've named there, all good lads, all top quality lads, you know, that you know, we all meet up, we all still meet, and you know, it's like you've never been young, you've seen them last week, you know, and things like this. So, but Dave Wagstaff, magnificent player.
I mean, just before Waggy died, I actually went, he had an allotment in Tetnell, didn't he, if you remember, Gerry?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And
yeah.
I took my Wolves books down and he signed them all, and I had a chat with him for about half an hour, and he was regaling all these stories. And, you know, like I said, what a gentleman. He liked a crafty fag, even when he was playing, but what an absolute
gentleman.
He did, yeah.
Gentleman. Oh, yeah, yeah. Quarter to three, you know, Waggy was gone. There was none of this going out and warming up, Lark, you know, and you know, I think Waggy had jacked the game in if that had come in during our time. But you know, he'd recorded to quarter to three, he'd be sat in the toilet, you know, having a crafty.
That
so,
is brilliant.
But absolute magician on the field.
What a team this is. And who is going to manage this great side, Gerry?
Well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, at Wolves, I had two managers. I had McGarry and then I had Sammy Chung. And Sammy Chung, you know, had been there all the time during my time there as our coach. You know, it was almost like McGarry, you know, bad cop, Chungy good cop, you know.
Yeah.
But, and I said things in my, you know, I alluded to things about Bill, you know, in my podcast with you earlier, Jason, you know. And you know, Bill was a difficult man. He was a disciplinarian, and you know, there's no two ways about it. He instilled things in you which still stick with you today. You know, so I would choose Bill.
I mean, he was
a difficult man. I mean,
I know you listen to the podcast, Gerry, and you listen to Steve Daly's, and there is a story in there where Steve's walking through Codsall, walking the dogs, and Bill McGarry pulled up. And you had a similar situation, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I went to live in Jersey. I was living in Jersey, and McGarry basically took Newcastle over there. He was managing Newcastle at the time, and he took him over for a training week and things like this. And I got invited to a dinner on the night, and went to the hotel and met up with him. And Peter Weir was playing for Newcastle, who I'd played with at the Wolves and things like this. So I saw Pete, and when McGarry come walking in, I shook his hand and says, "All right, boss, how you doing?" He says, "No." He says, "Them days are over." He says, "It's Bill." And I says, I didn't call you Bill in the five and a half years I was head boss. I says, so I find it difficult to call you Bill now. And, you know, and I sat and had a drink with him and spoke to him for about an hour. You know, sat down, had a chat with him. And he was very complimentary to me and while we were there. And I spoke more to him that night than I did in five and a half, 6 years at Wolves.
Wow. Well, your team, Gerry. So, he's a 4-3-3. Phil Parks in goal. Bobby Thompson right back. Derek Park in left back. Centre-half pairing of Colin Brazier and Frank Munro. Right midfield, Kenny Hibbett. Left midfield, Willie Carr. Centre midfield, Steve Daly. And your three up top, John Richards, Alan Sunderland, Dave Wagstaff. And your manager, Bill McGarry. Jerry, I've got to say, it's been great having you on the podcast again. That's an absolutely brilliant team, by the way. How much would
it be? It's not bad, is it?
Oh, not bad at all. And we look forward to having you on the podcast very soon, Jerry.
Chase, take care, mate, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks, Jerry.
Ta-ra, mate.
Ta-ra, mate.